Welcome to the Lock-In, episode 10 for Tuesday, 5th of May 2020. It's World Hand Hygiene Day today. It's good advice, and it was already a thing, apparently, even before this crisis, by the World Health Organization. My name's Conor Muinichon. I work for Black Knight, and I'm one of the fortunate people able to continue working from home. And my guest today is similarly fortunate. He also works from home, but really he seems to be everywhere, all over the internet, wherever I look. Michael Fortune from folklore.ie, welcome to the Lock-In podcast.
How are you doing? Are you well?
I'm great, Michael. And yourself?
I'm good. I just lost my phone is ringing here beside me now. It's talking about people getting away from people.
Will you tell them you'll call them back, or is that okay?
No, sure, look at it here now. I wouldn't mind, I had it turned off. It's off now.
You're a man that's in demand. Michael, I want to ask you more about your work in a minute. But first, tell me a little bit about where you live and what is life like there right now for you and for the people around you.
We're living here in rural County Wexford, northwest Wexford, a place called Curraghraig, and our nearest village would be Ballandagan. We're about 6-7 miles outside of Enniscorthy. We're one of the lucky few as well, I'll be honest with you, because we can work from home. We've got internet, and internet means we can get work done that I suppose we could have got done before, but we're kind of only realizing that we can work better, you know, or easier through it. So we're lucky. We've got our health. We've got 3 little girls here. So, and we're out in the countryside, so we can get up and go for our walks and keep in a little bit of a safe bubble. But only for the technology, only for internet and phone access, internet in particular, we wouldn't have any work. We'd be completely lost. It's thrown up loads of things for us. Yeah. Since it's happened. Yeah.
Well, as far as I can see, it's business as usual for you, Michael. I want to ask you about that. First of all, when you say we, you mean yourself and your wife, Aileen Lambert. You've got 3 little girls as well, you say. Can you describe for me the work that you do?
No. It's an interesting one. It's funny, there's a lot of slashes after my name. And I remember years ago people saying, I'll be a jack of all trades and master of none. But in some ways, I kind of find every area of work, it's like a spider's web. There's loads of different skill sets that you bring to your area of work. I suppose going through art college in Limerick, I would have been working with film and video. But I've always had this sense of place and the sense of who we are through stories, through song, through the actions and things that we do has always been there. And I suppose that's always been at the root of what I do and that interest. And I suppose I find different tools in which to record or document and share my eye on those particular things, whether it be folklore or beliefs. And that's one kind of practice of your practice where you produce work and you share work and you share that and generate conversations and create interesting conversations for yourself and for other people. And then the other strand of your work, one other strand of your work would be a lot of, we'd call it generally kind of project work, but I suppose there would be socially engaged, would be the kind of art term for it, but it would be working with people. You could work in a community, you could be working on a traditional song project or a folklore collection project or a map-based project. But again, this connection with people and being around people and mining information and also bringing people themselves on journeys where they kind of explore themselves and their place. So for years we would have shown work in galleries, film festivals, that kind of outlet for work. Or sometimes you would actually just produce work literally in the village and no one else would know about it, only the people you're working with. And that always worked for us, you know, because it was a lovely honesty to the work. But I found about 4 to 5 years ago, Con was I discovered Facebook and I didn't want to go on it first. And our self-assistant said, "Will you get your own account? Stop gawking at mine there, will you? And go to get yourself, set up your own page." So I set up my own page anyway. And within literally a couple of weeks, I began to realize how this thing worked, you know. And I was able to shoot the videos that I would have maybe shot 10, 15 years ago or things I would have spotted. Actually, I started putting up posts and I found people were interested in them. And I suppose people had never had a chance to see that kind of minute reflection, you know, whether it be a belief or a custom or a word that they might use. They wouldn't have got it. Maybe on local radio they might have got it, but not on national media, and there was no other way in which you could get it. So it was new, and it was new to me. And I played out with me a little bit. As I was saying earlier, there's no mad plan. So it's kind of working out, but it's grown and grown.
It's interesting, Michael, because the kind of work that you're engaged in is nothing new. It goes back well over 100 years. There's a long tradition and an academic tradition of folklore collection and curation and people documenting traditional beliefs and customs and songs and stories and things like that. And I'm not saying you're the only one that's uniquely doing it, but certainly you've been, as you said, very effectively doing it in the last while. What you're doing is putting that online and sharing it, and it actually gets a new life. As you say, you could exhibit a project in a local hall or something like this. One of the things that I find is very interesting is you put up videos and things on Facebook, and you will say something like, this is a custom here in County Wexford or something like that. Does anyone else anywhere in the country have a similar experience? And you're doing the research as well as presenting the folklore and the culture that's there.
Yeah, it's funny. I've always said that you could almost do a PhD on some of the threads alone.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting one to watch play out, Con. Because I've found, even as a practice, I've always found by giving you get back. And I remember, like, when we were back in the late 90s, I started using video back in the late 90s, and I would have been recording at home and a few neighbours and things like that. And people said, no one will talk to you on video. And I said, they will talk to you. And sure enough, they did. And like those village screenings back in the local hall, the whole idea behind it all was to get it back in circulation again and get those people talking about those things. And when the tool came on, which was for me anyway, for Facebook, it was just incredible. Like I'd put up a word, straight a fella in West Kerry would go, oh, my father used that. And straight away we were getting into the pockets of the people over in Newfoundland. We're all the ones from the South East and from Kerry as well, went over. And we're getting words back from Newfoundland. Now, otherwise we'd have to travel a day to get over to Newfoundland, you know, huge expense.
That's one of the most interesting things, Michael. I've noticed you've made two trips, I think, to Newfoundland. And it's been one of the most interesting things for me to listen to and watch is these Newfoundlanders. And the way they speak, and it's pure Southeast, it's pure Ireland coming across, not just in their accents, but in their expressions and the language they use.
Oh, it's incredible. We spent a month there last May. I should have brought over the way they look, they brought over their thinking, the mess, and all those lovely human characteristics, you know, the way they walk even, you know. And obviously their own, it's developed in its own little way as well, and you know, peculiar things. But you'd spot the ones that could be from the Wexford, where the strong Wexford community settled, or the strong South Tipperary community settled. And sure, the folklore, the belief, the fairies, all that stuff, all went over. But this, just with technology now, like we were doing a couple of Zoom sessions there over the last 5 weeks online, and we were having the storytelling nights, we were having traditional song nights, and we were able to get straight into rural Newfoundland and have recitations or songs or tunes being played. And like you couldn't have done that before. Well, you could have, but it wouldn't have happened, you know. So it's allowed a whole new way of working for us. I'm even recording, like even doing this with you now. I recorded a 77-year-old man yesterday. He rang me, so I said, listen, I'm going to record him. He didn't have FaceTime or he didn't have Zoom, but I'm recording a man over in Newfoundland whose grandfather spoke Irish, and he was the family left the southeast of Ireland back in probably early 1800s,
wow.
And they had words of Irish still. You know, he said he'd fluent Irish. So I'm going to do an online like this, what we're doing right now. So it's just opened up things for us completely.
It's extraordinary. Even I think it was a week or 2 weeks ago, Michael, you blogged on Facebook about the Arch Locher, the newt, and the traditions and the references there were to that in the southeast. I'll give you one. You may have heard this already, and I think you were writing about that. There was a belief that it could, if you weren't careful, it would climb into your mouth. This was something that that people would this little lizard that can be found in the wild countryside in West Clare, where I live now, and my wife's grandmother had an expression about somebody if they had a healthy appetite and if they couldn't be satisfied at the table, oh, you must have an Arch Locher. In other words, the belief was that someone who had this appetite that couldn't be satisfied, the reason was that he had swallowed one of these Arch Lochers and it was eating the food, and it was, as a result, the person was insatiable. Did you have that one in County Wexford?
No, I never heard that. It's brilliant. He was feeding two.
Again, I was going to comment last week on your Facebook. I was going to share that one with you in response to your post. And then I said, sure, no, I'm talking to you anyway. I'll be talking to you on the podcast anyway this week.
Isn't it great kind of way those words survived, isn't it?
It is.
And some of those, like, what I like about doing it as well, for me, it's interesting, is just you throw them up then, and then when you're sparking that reminder. Mm. And it's a good thing in some ways, you know, because Arith Khmer just opened up our language and our connection to our language. And it's not harking back to the past. That's the other thing. It's not about harking back to the past. It's about realizing the richness that's there, you know, and keeping those threads there, those threads carrying on into the future as well.
We're locked in or we're locked down now, Michael. And one of the things that you've been promoting over the last number of years is the May Bush tradition. And you've had the Wexford May Bush Festival. It turns out that actually the Wexford May Bush Festival is kind of ideally designed for people to do while socially distant and self-isolating and staying at home. It's perfect for lockdown because it's something that people can do at home and then take photos and share on Facebook.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing. Yeah, and it was done in Clare as well. I've regarded accounts of East Clare and East Galway, and our little versions of it. Mm. You know, everywhere you went, there were different versions of it. Our one here was either a piece of a furze or a gorse or a white tarn, sometimes an old bush. And people would come May Eve or May Day. Mm. They would decorate it. Usually May Eve, you decorate it with eggshells and ribbons and primroses. And we've been on about it again through social media, kind of only for it. You know, we've been pushing it every year for the last 5 years. Deliberately pushing it for the last 5 years. Mm. And it's literally grown and grown. And again, it's a tool. I always say these things are tools. What we're using now is a tool to tell a message or to work. But sure, it's gorgeous. People are at home now and families. And we've actually got more this year than we've ever got.
Wow.
And because of the lockdown, because the parents are home. And you know what? It's a bit of fun with the kids. But I also think there's something psychological in it. When you know that's a bit something about steering off bad luck and bringing a bit of good luck to their home, I think the adults kind of carry that with them too, you know. Maybe quietly we carry it, you know, when we're doing it with our kids.
One of the interesting things about folklore, Michael, is that it keeps events in history alive for people and reminds us that major upheavals in history aren't anything new. We mightn't have seen them in the last 40 or 50 years, but if you go back, there was the Great War, there was the Napoleonic Wars, there was 1798. We don't tend to have much in our culture about the famine, and it's probably something we've buried for very painful reasons. But there are certainly... it's interesting the way history lives in songs and in stories and in traditions going back over hundreds and hundreds of years. We're now, Michael, in the middle of a major upheaval. What do you think in terms of folklore will be the result of 2020 coronavirus and all of the very strange and I suppose unsettling things that are happening right now? Do you think this will endure in the folk memory?
Absolutely. I think it will. I'm trying to gauge and figure it out myself. As I said, we're living in a little bit of a bubble, and there's people out there who are getting pure hardship, you know, people who are on the front line working, people who've lost relatives. We are in a different kind of a bubble. But all I can see is, even just as it, having young kids, is that it's a time that we'll never get again. It's offered us a bit of a handbrake on our lives. And I know probably people have been saying this. I haven't been listening to much media, but we're getting out, and it's like a long summer. I see our girls here now. They're noticing things. They're noticing the flowers coming and going. They're noticing little insects and butterflies and stuff like that. And I think that will live on. That memory will definitely live on. Mm. I'm trying to figure out living on whatever. Otherwise, you know, it's funny, in the traditional song repertoire, we've been going to a lot of Zoom traditional song sessions. The song's cropping up already. We've noticed that about COVID-19, however long they will last. But
that's interesting, and I noticed that's something obviously that relies on people getting together physically. But some of that has been going on online. I know the Gaoline Singers Club in Dublin have had instead of their usual is it monthly gatherings, they've been doing it using Zoom and quite successfully as well.
Oh, sure, it's fantastic. It's working. They've got packed houses every Friday night. And it's unreal. And we've been using ourselves for singing. We've been touching base with singers over in Clare for workshops.
Yeah.
And it is working. I've even found I was doing 6 weeks teaching down in the art college in Limerick. And I'm just kind of wondering how it will affect us. I think there will not necessarily folklore, but new ways of working. Like I was working with students doing digital media down in, I should have been in Limerick with them, but they were all at home, they were in Tipperary, they were in Clare, they were in Donegal. And you know what, I kind of found I got better results this year than if I had 16 in a class. They had to go off and make up their own tripods and had to figure out stuff themselves and they had to be more independent. Mm. And then they did a richer feeding ground feeding the work because they were at home and they were connecting to the place themselves. So I that really, really struck me. 5-6 weeks and every week, you know. And I'm finding us still with singers and different things we're doing, traditional singers, musicians, people are finding new ways to work and to operate. And it's offering them, and I'm sure when this all quietens down, those skills and those ways of working in the cultural sector will be carried on, you know.
It'll be very interesting to see what endures after this. Michael Fortune, a pleasure talking to you. Regards to you and to your family. Stay safe. Agus cunigort. Mahanfair. Gur magad.
Thanks, Alan. Slán.
That's Michael Fortune, our guest on the podcast today, and you can find out more about Michael and Aileen and their work at folklore.ie. A couple of things I want to mention. You've probably heard this. It's lighting up the social media feeds today, and that is the appeal of on behalf of the Choctaw, Navajo and Hopi Indian communities in the United States, which has prompted a generous and very warm response from Irish people. And that is because, of course, the Choctaw people, only in the wake of enduring their own trauma during the Trail of Tears forced migration in the 1840s, when they heard about the Irish people suffering due to famine in this country, donated a significant sum of money, given their own meagre resources at the time. That is now being cited by a lot of Irish people who are responding to that appeal on GoFundMe.com. I'll put a link into that in the podcast notes, and you can get it. You can see it on the screen if you're watching our video version on YouTube as well. Also, I love this. Twisted Doodles does wonderful cartoons. We'll show this one on the screen as well. And it's an analysis of the first 100 responses to a lockdown checklist survey conducted. Twisted Doodles is a cartoonist. She's a scientist. She's a mother of twins. And these things all influence her cartoons and her creativity, much of which is posted on Facebook as well. So what have people been doing during the lockdown? From 100 people questioned, 96% of people have baked. Half of them made banana bread. Only 14% attempted a sourdough starter. If you've comfort eaten during this time, you're not alone, apparently. 93% have done so, with 4 out of 5 of us buying food online. People were more likely to cut someone else's hair than their own. And 3 people were injured in a haircut, which led to an injury. That's out of 100 people. 9 out of 10 people have had a group video chat. And a little more than half of these have had a quiz. And a little less of half of these people have gotten drunk. This is very funny. We'll post it all. It's up there on the thing. And always, Twisted Doodles really kind of nails the feelings and the I suppose things that you can really relate to in relation to something that's going on in society right now. Social distancing is important, she says. 92% have judged someone for not doing it, and half of people have worn a mask. Half of the 100 people in this relatively unscientific survey have planted something. Most of us have screamed, but internally rather than externally, and most of us miss people, but we've laughed more than we've cried. It's very, very well put. Music is still continuing to inspire people online. One of the things that I find really lovely at the moment is a lot of famous and talented musicians are locked down with their families. And it turns out that they have talented brothers and sisters and siblings and sons and daughters as well. I want to post a link to John Fogarty has posted on YouTube of Creedence Clearwater Revival. He's posted posted a recording of he and his family sitting around the campfire singing Green River, the Creedence song. And it's really, really nice indeed, John and his children there. And the final one I want to link to is from mayo.ie. And Donacha O'Connell from Galway posted this, and I followed Donacha, and he posted a link to this. He's a proud Mayo man, and so are the other people involved. Mayo Day 24 apparently was a thing over the weekend, or recently, not sure exactly when. But anyway, Mayo Day 2020 was on, and this is an amazing performance of traditional Irish musicians, Lisa Kenny and others, performing together and all mixed together at the end of the day by somebody very clever indeed. That's it. TheLockIn.ie is our address if you want to subscribe to the podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're on Spotify, which is where a lot of you apparently are listening to podcasts, and you're very welcome to come and subscribe to us there. All of the links are on TheLockIn.ie, including all the links to things that I've mentioned. And we'll be back again with another podcast next Friday. Good evening. Slán go fóill.